This episode of the Potterverse is brought to you by MinuteWithMary.com. Listen, I love talking about lashes. I know it's something small and trivial, but when I put on a dynamite mascara, I feel like Betty Boop. I feel like boop, boop, ba-doop, boo, and I'm just going to fill up my gas tank in my Harry Potter robe pajamas. True story, but I still like to look slamming with my lashes. I just feel like it pulls me together. It helps me feel polished, even if I'm in Potter t-shirts or clothes. And because of that, I went on this mission to find the best mascara ever. And I found it. I found it. And I fell in love with it even so much that I decided to become part of the company and now sell it. You can find it at MinuteWithMary.com. But since you're a podcast listener of ours, I thought I'd make it extra sweet and get you 15% off my favorite mascara. It's this 4D mascara, and it gives you the look of false eyelashes without dealing with all that tacky glue and all that craziness going on. If you know how to put on mascara, you can put on the best mascara of your life. Head on over to MinuteWithMary.com/discount. From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners. Let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. My name is Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I thought my wife would be proud because I shortened up the intro, and it was flawless. You're welcome for that.
You're welcome.
You know, the funny thing is that Mary has listened to the John Williams score so many times and knows that that score, that song, by heart so well that she heard one slight difference. She's like, oh, you shortened it? You did, didn't you? And like, it's like one of those silent communication things that we have. If you're watching us live, you can hear it and you can see it. But if you're listening on the podcast app, oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, that was a silent communication to beat the best of them right there.
I got you, boo.
Marvin, what do you think about the podcast so far? And by the way, the podcast is available on all the podcast apps that you could ever think of now, finally.
all of them.
It's all there. I think, although we're still waiting on iHeartRadio. But other than that,
Ryan Seacrest is holding out.
Other than that, we are ready to go. We're here. We're having some fun.
Awesome.
We're having fun with it. So what do you think about the podcast so far? Things that need to get improved, things that need to be...
Are you asking me?
Yeah, you. What do you think? Are you happy with the podcast so far?
I'm happy.
Okay, good. That's what I'm wondering.
I'm terrible at critiquing ourselves. Terrible at it.
You're not like me. You don't listen to our podcast religiously every single time.
Nope.
No, apparently not.
Oh my goodness gracious. Well, I do want to first let everybody know that I just today, the day that we're recording, created our complimentary texting service where I can send you a text to let you know, yes, we're going live. So you can join us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter to join in the conversations and to have a lot of fun with it. All you need to do is take out your phone and send a text to the phone number 81010. And then in the message field, put @ Elder Wand.
Oh, hey. Oh,
the one,
yeah,
wand to rule them all. Nerd! Elder Wand. Just as one word. So once again, the number is 81010. And in the message, @ Elder Wand, ELDERWAND, no spaces. And you will be added to our complimentary texting service.
Go to maryandblake.com. Check out all the cool things that we got there. And check out Mary and Blake, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. All the good places there. Thank you for all the reviews. And if you find that this show gives you the kind of value and gives you a different perspective on Harry Potter or just Mary and I in general, please do give us a review and make it a written one so we can get it on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or whatever your favorite podcatcher of choice is. Just send it over to us, and that way we get to read it, make our day, and have some fun with it. Marvin, are you ready to get into this show?
Yes, ready to rumble.
Let's do it.
The title that of the chapter we're talking about today is Chapter 2, The Vanishing Glass. And I wanted to read you the following quote, because it just gave me all the little goosies. When he had been younger, Harry had dreamed and dreamed of some unknown relation coming to take him away, but it had never happened. The Dursleys were his only family, yet sometimes he thought, or maybe hoped, that strangers in the street seemed to know him.
That a girl. And pick it another fantastic entry, another fantastic passage. I like this little tradition that we've started here.
You know, I like to think that strangers in the street know me. Because all of a sudden,
it's
I'm getting a lot.
Sometimes.
Oh, actually, I don't like, not like, yeah, you're right. People do know me in Rhode Island a lot. Oops. But I mean, what I'm saying is that people like my mask. Like, I think that they know me because they're like eye twinkle smiling. I can't really tell if they're smiling because their smile is behind their mask. But they're like looking at me and I'm like, oh my God, are you my friend? And really, I realize it's because I'm wearing this like really exciting Harry Potter mask.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
I'm this grown woman rocking my HP pride when I think they're trying to be my friend. They may be. Maybe I should get a the Potterverse mask.
We are working on some Mary and Blake media masks. I will tell you that. We are trying to work
on. And then
it
when
up.
They're looking at me, saying in their minds, I'm a Potter fan too. But I can't talk to this girl because I got to keep a 6 foot distance that they can go find the Potterverse.
So let's chat about chapter two, The Vanishing Glass. Marvin, where do you want to begin on The Vanishing Glass?
Okay, well, can we give like a quick little recap about what happens in this episode?
Go right ahead.
It's Dudley's birthday. He's a spoiled little brat that go to the zoo, and Harry gets a little miffed because Dudley and his friend aren't acting that nice. And then, I don't know why, but Harry magically somehow kind of makes the glass disappear, and the snake gets out, and Harry gets in trouble.
And that's about it.
Yeah.
Hey, this, I love the end when Mr. Dursley's like, when Vernon's like, you closet. Don't come out. No meals.
How terrible.
He's just so angry. He couldn't even form a sentence.
What 80s parenting, by the way. Can you imagine what would happen if you punished your kid by not giving them a meal?
He said, you cannot eat. Can you imagine
right
that?
Right there is 80s parenting.
Oh, man. 80s parenting is the best. The best.
No tang. No, no tang
no
for a week.
Oh, man.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yeah. So just, you know, this is the first time that we get to see Harry use magic, and he doesn't even know he did it.
Yeah. Well, it kind of alludes to the fact that Harry has done magic prior to all this without knowing it. But this is the first time that we are privy as the reader
to his
magical ability. And I think there's also something implicit in his dreams that he has magical ability, because he's remembering back to a time where he sees green light and a flash and the whole thing. And there is absolutely zero chance on any planet, I don't even care if it's Planet Zippy, that you can remember as a 3-month-old anything.
He wasn't three. He was 1 year.
Well, whatever. Can you remember anything? Can you remember anything from being 1 year old?
I don't know.
No, absolutely not. No.
I mean, no.
I think your earliest memory is probably going to come from when you're three.
Listen, if my parents were killed in front of my eyes by he who must not be named, I might remember that. I might. People remember like smells and things. I don't know.
Yeah, not from when you're a year old.
I feel like you would have that as a repetitive nightmare, just ingrained in your brain thanks to a scar. I bet you the scar let him know. I bet you the scar gave him super duper memory.
Well, but the scar is in itself inherently magical.
Mm-hmm.
So, it also alludes to the fact that I think that because Harry is having these dreams and he does have this vague memory of this green flash,
and the motorcycle,
that is magical.
The motorbike.
And the motorbike too, yeah. Like, there's no chance when you are a 1 year old, you're going to remember a motorbike. It is not going to happen,
unless you're Harry Potter,
because you have magic.
But you know, they go into talking about how these different things have happened to him over time that he can't explain, and it was just fun little references, like the fact that Uncle Vernon always says that Harry needs a haircut, because Harry honestly does always need a haircut. Mm-hmm. His hair just keeps growing. He'll have it cut, and then right away it just grows right back. Mm-hmm. Or how he was being, you know, picked on, and he was suddenly on the top of a building. Like, just all these little random things that happened to him that he can't explain. He doesn't even know he's doing it, but it just happens to him.
Yeah, there's a lot of great things that happen in this chapter. A lot of things that just kind of, you know, again, allude to a much larger world. But one of the things that I really love about this chapter is the way that it begins. And the way that it begins is it just, you can feel the movement. You can feel the kind of scene that the author is trying to create. It feels really tactile. It feels really important. And it gives you a clue about the people and how they live their lives. And the way that the chapter begins is this. The sun rose on the same tidy front gardens and lit up the brass number 4 on the Dursley's front door. It crept into their living room, which you touching everything, Mom.
I was trying to make the camera go on you.
Wow. Mary is touching my keyboard and it just totally messed up my entire desktop. That's okay, Mary. No problem. Don't worry about it. I'll do the
camera
for
me. You're
the
one that showed me how to do that.
I did. Okay. It crept into their living room, which was almost exactly the same as it had been on the night when Mr. Dursley had seen that fateful new report about the owls. And it goes on to talk about the pictures and how it went from this tiny little pink beach ball to a much larger picture of
Dudley.
Of Dudley playing computer games with Vernon and the whole thing. You can feel the movement. You can feel how all of these things are staying the same in the Dursley household, but also time is passing. And I felt like that was such a unique and beautiful way to really get into the story of Harry Potter. Not only were we introduced in the first chapter outside of Harry's perspective, and we were starting with the Dursleys, but we're continuing on with the Dursleys again. And it's giving you a history of the Dursleys and not necessarily Harry.
Yeah, you know, this introduction made me think about how when I go to someone's house, the first thing I do when they like welcome me is I just peep at all the pictures on the mantle and in the living room hanging and, you know, it gives you a sense of like who their family is, what they think of as important, you know, their most momentous moments. And I love to ask people about those pictures, you know, who is this and when was this taken? And that's what the author was able to do for us. It was all able to explain, the important people in this family by leaving a certain character out.
Yes. That's the idea, at least. I think we're in good hands when it comes to the author and the way that she wants to tell this story. Do you feel like the way that she's introduced the story and the way that she's continue on with this chapter that like it's really good scene setting and really good storytelling so far?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because of course we're told by Minerva McGonagall that they're the worst sort of muggles. And yet, you know, they do seem kind of ordinary. Yes, Dudley's a dweeb of a baby, but like a lot of babies are, okay? Not every baby's a little angel, and a lot of women are a little nosy, and a lot of men are a little nosy, and you know, judgmental. But in this chapter, we do get to see how terrible of muggles they are, that they treat a child in such a disgustingly wrong way.
Do you think it borders on caricature, the way that they treat Harry? Like, it feels almost too much?
No.
No? How come?
Because, sadly, I know that some children are treated like this. I mean, I wish I could easily say, oh, yeah, this is just fiction. I mean, you know, a lot of people have different upbringings. And I think that that's one of the things that catches people about Harry Potter is that a lot of people's home lives are not the traditional ones that you see in television or read about in books that are filled with love and joy, caring environments. And I'm not saying that everybody lives in a cupboard under the stairs.
Yep.
But I do think that there are families where there is a child who is liked and a child who is not liked, and they are treated very differently. And I think that there is a child who often has to do chores more. I mean, you know, still in this generation, but I know in generations past, like, you know, physically harming children, there was frequently a child who was the one that was picked on physically. So when I read this, I didn't see it too caricatured. I saw it as this family just is wretched. It reminded me a lot of Matilda. We're reading Matilda with the kids.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yep.
And yet again, you know, like here's a family who treasures one child and they think that Matilda's garbage and yep. they treat her terribly as well.
So do you get a real good sense of what the Dursleys are about in this chapter? And given the first chapter and this chapter, do you get a good sense of who they are and what they're doing to Harry? But not only Harry, but what they're doing to Dudley. Right? Like, the way that Dudley acts.
36.
36. Last year I had 37. You know, like, I think there's an argument to be made that I like that that's either nature or nurture. Like, that just depends on the kind of person that you are. But in my estimation, the way that Dudley acts, that seems like a manifestation of how freaking awful the Dursleys are. And then when you contrast that against Harry, and how Dudley is just, he is literally the opposite of Harry in every way. Harry is skinny, he is small, he is meek, he lives in a cupboard.
He's also grateful. You know, Dudley is upset that he only has 36 presents. Mm-hmm. Only 36. And he wants this birthday just to himself with his friend Piers. And we see Harry, who gets the cheapest ice cream.
He's so happy about
it. He's so happy.
He says it was like the best day of his life or the best morning of his life.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
To have actually gotten to go to the zoo and get, you know, like a little lemon ice and for that to be something very special, even though he knew it's because it was the cheapest one. Because, of course, you're reading this, you know, from his perspective, pretty much like he knew it was cheap, but he was still so happy about it.
And, you know, the funny thing is that whenever you have a particular story, whenever you're crafting something, you have a protagonist, who in this case would be Harry, and then you have an antagonist. And generally, every single scene, there's a protagonist and an antagonist. And the way that their author is writing it is that Dudley is the absolute antagonist of this story so far, especially with the way that she ends the
I would say Vernon.
I don't know. The reason why I say that is because, again, Dudley is the opposite of Harry in every way, but yet they both want the same thing. They want attention from their family. Regardless of whatever Harry thinks about the Dursleys, he still considers them family. He even said, the narrator of the chapter even says so, like the Dursleys are the only family that he knows. But more on top of that is that Harry wants to belong. Harry wants a family. And Dudley wants the same thing. He even has his own gang that at the end of the chapter, the author says that nobody went across Dudley's gang. They both want to feel a part of something. Because of that, they both want the same thing. They're opposites of each other. It feels like Dudley is the antagonist of this chapter.
See, maybe it's just because I know what happens in latter books, of course, but I feel bad for Dudley. And we talked about how we're often going to be looking at chapters through different viewpoints. And I want to look at this through actually Dudley's perspective. Dudley was raised by his parents, that he was the center of the world. And this is why I put more blame on the parents. Sure. Yes, there are spoiled brat children. Dudley is still a wee child at this point. But his parents have taught him this. His parents have told him, you're the world. You get whatever you want. We didn't get you enough presents. No worries. We'll get you some more on the way to there. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll make it so that they put down Harry in front of him so he thinks it's okay. It's like when you raise your children to be racist, that is what they know because they've heard their parents, you know, react that way.
Sure.
So, you know, when children are this young and their biggest educators and influencers are their parents, that is who I blame. And because of that, I do not feel comfortable saying that in this chapter, Dudley's an antagonist. I feel badly that Dudley has been raised in such a cruel environment where he feels so elite mm-hmm. compared to his cousin that, you know, I'm not saying he's perfect at all. I think that it's very wrong that he picks on him. But he doesn't know any different. And he's always been praised at school. You know, he's the leader of his gang at school. Mm-hmm. And it makes me so excited for him to be put in his place with a darn pigtail and to hear that Harry is magical and to have the fear of power. You know what I mean? Just for him to have the rug pulled out from under him, for him to realize at some point, like, there's this whole other world out there. And in the last, I think it's the last book, second to last book, I'm trying to rack my memory now, you know, Dudley apologizes. Like, Dudley realizes he's a schmuck when he's older and wiser.
Sure, sure. You know, actually, Kate Duggan here on Facebook says you could say the same thing about Draco.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, you know, Draco also has this moment at the end of the series where he's like, oh my God, wow, I was wrong. You know, and that's great. Like, that's a character arc, you know, that you start one way. And in Dudley's case, it's the most awful, vile thing. Melissa Carolyn here on Facebook says, Dudley is a product of the parents' bad choices. It's not his fault that he is as awful as he is. He's still a child.
Yes.
So he starts this one way as a child, but ends the series, or ends his last appearance,
with growth,
saying, oh, wow, that was kind of dumb.
Yeah.
I did that.
I mean, I would have liked even more massive growth, but seeing as how where we are, our entire journey with Harry up until that point, it's still big growth. And, you know, that's it. You need to remember that these books are, yes, teenage years or you know, preteen years, but they're still children and
right.
They're still learning. And then we have Harry, you know, that whole last bit talking about these dreams that he has and how he yearns. It's the quote that I read in the beginning, how he dreams of some unknown relation taking him away. And it just makes me so sad because Sirius Black is currently alive, living in Azkaban prison. His godfather is far away, and his godfather is going to try in two books to come and get him.
Right. It makes you wonder how much the author really had this all planned out. I know we talked about that a little bit in the last chapter, but there just seems to be, like, when you're reading these little nuggets, I mean, the fact that Harry is talking to a snake in this chapter.
Talking and winking.
Right, and winking. Snakes don't have eyelids, bro. What the hell are you talking about?
They don't?
No!
How do they cover their eyes from sand?
I have no idea. They're snakes. They're crazy. They don't have legs and they move.
Snakes don't have eyelids?
No, I don't think they have eyelids.
Hold on. Because seriously, what if dust gets in it? Snakes don't have what we think of as eyelids.
Told
Instead,
you.
They have something called a brillae attachment to each eye.
Bam! Just like that. A winner!
It is known as an eye cap or a spectacle. So they protect the eyes from dust and dirt and gives them a glassy-eyed appearance. So it's pretty much like saran wrap. Or is what's
cling wrap?
Oh, press and seal.
They got press and seal. Snakes don't go. They don't do saran wrap.
Once you do press and seal,
you don't go back.
You do not go back.
You don't. Press and seal is the only way to go going forward.
That's it.
Like saran wrap should be out of business.
Yes.
Saran. The whole saran.
Why are you here?
They just go away. Go away. There's no need for saran wrap anymore. Press and seal is where it's at.
So here we go, and Harry's dreaming about this family that lives far away. The snake winked at him, obviously. And people are recognizing him. A tiny man with a violet hat, a top hat, bowed to him once while he was out shopping with his aunt and Dudley. And Aunt Petunia, like, bugged out because Harry didn't know him. And then a woman dressed all in green waved merrily at him on a bus. A bald man in a very long purple coat had shaken his hand across the street. The other day when they walked. And these people would vanish right away.
Right.
So, you know, it makes me kind of think... You know, like, Obama has that house on Martha's Vineyard.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, when we've gone to Martha's Vineyard, we've been like, is he going to be at one of these restaurants? Because there's only so many restaurants.
You can only go to so many places on the vineyard.
And, like, there's a lot of famous people that chill on the vineyard. A lot of actors. A lot of people just go and, like, relax there. And they're just like us. They need to go eat.
Yep.
And then what do you do? So here's Harry Potter. He looks just like James Potter. He's got a big scar.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do if you saw Harry Potter and you thought that he was like the greatest gift to the world because he got rid of Lord Voldemort? Would you ignore him? Would you kind of make eye contact? What would you do?
Me as a person?
You, Blake Larson. This is my fun question of the day. I've mentioned it earlier.
good one. I like this question.
Write to maryandblakemedia@gmail.com with... trivia questions, kind of the ones that your annoying orientation leader would give you as an icebreaker, aka me. That's what I would do, and I'm doing it right now.
All right, so here it is. I tend to think of it of something like someone who I met that I just like I fawn over, and that first person I think of is Damon Lindelof. Like if I saw Damon Lindelof
yes.
in a restaurant, I think I would internally freak the frack out. And I would, my blood pressure would be raising. I would get hot. I'd probably pass out a little bit.
You probably would.
But I wouldn't say a damn word.
You wouldn't?
I wouldn't say a damn word. I'd just be like, oh my God, that's Damon Lindelof. Holy crap. And then I would freak out. I would talk to you about it. And then I would just continue eating my meal. What would you do?
You know what I'd do because you saw me do it. I don't get like stage fright in front of actually famous people. I've had the wonderful fortune of in either the music field or the television field to be able to interview a lot of people and meet a lot of people that I think very highly of and I look up to. But I had a complete like nerdgasm over a podcaster. And I just went up to him and I said, I really like what you do. Like, I didn't even say I love your podcasting. I was just so shocked to see him in real life that that's what I said. And yeah, so that's what I would probably do to Harry Potter. I'd probably awkwardly go up and be like, thank you. Thank you.
You're so awesome.
And then just disappear.
You'd be like Chris Farley. Remember the old SNL skit when Chris Farley interviews Paul McCartney?
No.
And he's like, hey, you don't remember that?
Blake, I wasn't allowed to watch SNL.
Oh my God.
I couldn't watch The Simpsons. I couldn't watch SNL. There's watch 90210.
There's the incredible skit of Chris Farley interviewing on the Chris Farley show within SNL, him interviewing Paul McCartney.
Okay.
And he's like, hey, Paul McCartney, remember that time? Remember that time you were on the Beatles? And Paul McCartney was like, yeah. And he says, yeah, that was awesome. Like, I feel like that would be you with Harry Potter. Remember that time you lived?
Yeah.
Remember that time you stopped Voldemort? That was awesome.
That would be.
You know, actually, Kate Duggan here says on Facebook, the journey of the hero is always the same. The author knew that, which is why she feels like this was all planned out. And Kate, I would probably agree with you. The hero's journey is generally the same as created by Joseph Campbell. You see that in Star Wars. Like, Luke Skywalker is the perfect example of the Joseph Campbell hero story. You know, but the problem with the hero story is the way that Campbell created it was that they have to deny.
Who's Campbell? What are we talking about?
It doesn't matter. They have to deny.
But you're like talking about it like I'm supposed to know.
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
The hero story, part of it, Campbell writes, is that the hero has to not accept his challenge. He has to say, no, I'm not going. In Luke's case, in Luke Skywalker in Star Wars, his thing was, no, I can't leave. I can't go. I have my
aunt and uncle.
I have to stay here. I got things. Harry does not deny his journey. He doesn't say. He says, "I'm not anything. I'm just I'm Harry." But he doesn't deny it. He accepts it. He wants it. He goes with it. So I'm not saying he doesn't have a hero's journey, but the Campbellian hero's journey requires that protagonist to say, "No, I'm not doing that." In the beginning,
I'm glad Harry didn't say no.
Me too.
It'd be very ungrateful.
You know, we talked a little bit about...
Are you ready for a journey? Heck, yes, I am.
In this vein, we talked about how much the author planned out. And I want to get to my favorite part of this chapter. And I know we're coming on 28 minutes, so we're gonna close up here in a little bit.
Okay.
But I want to come up... I want to come at my favorite part of this entire chapter. And that is this. Harry had always been skinny for his age. He looked even smaller and skinnier than he really was because all he had to wear were old clothes of Dudley's, and Dudley was about four times bigger than he was. Harry had a thin face, knobbly knees, black hair, and bright green eyes. He wore round glasses held together with a lot of sellotape because of all the times Dudley punched him on the nose. The only thing Harry liked about his own appearance was a very thin scar on his forehead, which was shaped like a bolt of lightning. He had had it as long as he could remember. The first question he could ever remember asking his Aunt Petunia was how he got it. Now, first, this is a great descriptor of Harry. You get an immediate sense of his build, mm-hmm. of his look, of how tactile he can be. Mm-hmm. Green eyes, nose, glasses, height, skinny.
Broken glasses.
Broken glasses, weight. Hair, all of it. It all comes bum, bum, mm-hmm. bum, 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 bum. But the thing that he likes about himself is uniquely his. Everything else kind of is, But the thing that he likes, the one thing that the author calls out that Harry likes about himself, is the only thing that is uniquely his. He has his dad's hair, which you don't know yet.
No.
But he has his dad's hair. He has his mother's eyes, which again, you don't know yet, but he has his mother's eyes. He's wearing Dudley's clothes. He even has a nose that's kind of messed up like Dumbledore's, who was called out last chapter when we said it looked like it had been broken at least a couple of times. Note that connection. But the only thing that is inherently his is, in fact,
his scar.
His scar, which comes from Voldemort.
Yes.
And now it's not Voldemort's. It's inherently Harry's. It's the only thing that's inherently his, but it comes from Voldemort. It echoes that connection. Mm. It echoes that magic. And it also brings to light the fact, without you even noticing it, without even knowing it, that big bad, that connection, the big bad for the whole series is right there in front of your face. Right in the beginning of the book.
Which has also been referenced in chapter one when Dumbledore said scars, you know, sometimes come in handy.
Right, exactly.
So we've now heard the importance of this scar twice in the first two chapters.
Yep.
And I'd also like to thank this chapter. It's the next book, but our son likes to try to speak in parcel tongue. And we're like, we don't speak parcel tongue. We are not descendants of Salazar Slytherin, honey.
Can we just talk about, we're going to close up here in 1 minute, but can we just talk about the fact that parcel tongue is already happening in chapter two, and where it's connected to later on. You don't even know anything about parcel tongue at all. And the funny thing is that there was zero context. All of a sudden, Harry is just talking to a snake. But he's just talking.
Yeah. And he doesn't think it's that big of a deal. He's like, oh, it winked. Where are you from? Cool. I'm not, you know, like just chilling. Just straight right. Chilling with just the snake.
Chilling, having fun, talking about Brazil.
Love it.
Growing up in captivity. Thanks, amigo. Like,
oh my goodness gracious.
The author just expects you to just go along. Like in the first chapter, you saw a cat turn into a human. And now all of a sudden, Harry Potter, who is 10 years old, is talking to a snake with no context, no like, oh my God, you can understand me? Like in the movie, like in the film, he says, wow, you can understand me. And the snake nods its mm-hmm. head. No. There's none of that. It's just, hey, what's up? Hey, you're a snake. I'm a human. We're talking.
Just straight chilling.
Just straight chilling.
Winking eyes.
I think that was, it's a lot. It's a lot to accept.
And yet you do.
Yeah, when you were reading it, were you like, wait, hold on?
Nope, I just kept turning the page. I was like, all right, talks to snakes. All right, cat turns into woman. Cool. Sign me up.
That's funny. Because it's odd because when I read it, I'm like, wait, whoa.
I've read other weirder things.
But the funny thing is that like I had like the perspective of
like
the
film. Like a
vampire
baby that falls in love with a werewolf. But it's a baby, but it kind of acts like an adult.
So
I've read weirder things.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Good point. Valid point.
You're not adding my sound effect.
You're right. Oh my God. Hold on. Sorry.
I need to take over sound effects pretty soon.
No, don't you. You will. You will not.
Say it out loud.
There you go.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Anything else you got about this chapter, my darling?
No, that's about it.
All right. Let's close it out.
We'd like to thank you so much for joining us on the Potterverse. And if you could take a moment to share this with your friends, whether it's hitting that share button on Facebook or Twitter, retweeting or sharing a YouTube link here or there, or even taking a screenshot of either the live video or the podcast that you're listening to and sharing that in your Instagram or Facebook stories, help other Potterheads find the Potterverse.
And remember, go to the jointhenerdclan.com to get all of the great benefits that Mary and I offer to you as members of the Nerd Clan. You can get all the great podcasts that we offer. You get access to the community, free swag. There's a whole bunch of stuff. jointhenerdclan.com. Check us out too on all the social media, Mary and Blake, just Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all of it. Mary and Blake, we're here for you. We're having fun. We're talking about Harry Potter. What do you say?
Stay tuned for the next episode in which we'll take care of Chapter 3, The Letters from No One. We are planning on going live on Facebook Mondays, definitely. Hopefully Wednesdays on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, everywhere. So we'll see you there. For now, my name's Mary.
My name is Blake.
Mischief Managed.